Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And we're going to have a very exciting podcast for you this time because we have an artist fan spotlight. So we're talking about Voltron fan artists. And of course, I can't do this without my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Oh, I'm on? Wow. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hello, Voltron fans across the universe. It is so cool to be back. I have as much fun recording this and being involved with this podcast as hopefully all you do listening. So thank you for listening, and let's get this party started.
Yes, let's get this party started.
All right.
I am so excited because we haven't, you know, had a fan artist on in a while. So I'm excited because that means another exclusive piece that we're going to be showing to all the Voltron fans out there. And all these Voltron fan artists put so much work and dedication into each of their pieces, and it's a labor of love. So I'm thankful to be able to share this with everyone. So let's get her on.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So this artist is really an inspiring artist because there's a lot of things that I liked about some of the pieces that I've seen already that have been shared on Twitter, out on Instagram, you know, DeviantArt, Tumblr, all that kind of stuff. And we're just excited to be able to have her with us. So I want to introduce her right now. Everybody knows her as Kay Lionheart, also known as Kat. Welcome, Kat.
Hi, everybody. It's me.
Hi.
Welcome.
Put me on here. Thank you so much for having me. This is super exciting.
Well, we're excited to have you with us. So thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
So where are you calling in from on this fine evening?
Well, I currently live in the happy-go-lucky state of Utah. Nobody really lives here.
All right.
Yeah, I've been living here for a few years now. It's a pretty great place. The weather's wonky, but, you know, I actually enjoy living here. It's quiet. It's nice. It's actually a pretty great place to walk around whenever you need any inspiration, if you want to go out into nature and not deal with, like, traffic and metropolitan stuff. So it's a pretty nice place.
Have you lived in more metropolitan areas before moving to Utah?
That's right. I used to live in Miami, Florida,
wow,
a few years ago. That's right. It's crazy. Crazy move. Nobody expects that move from Florida to Utah. A lot of people ask me, like, where is that when I first moved? Because it's a crazy move. So, yeah, I'm kind of actually a city girl. But, you know, ever since my family moved here, we've definitely enjoyed it a lot more.
Well, good.
I actually have been to Salt Lake City recently within the past 6 months.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my company has an office out there, so we had gone out to do a little bit of training for some of the people out there.
Oh, man, well, it would have been great to, like, meet up or something, but you know what? Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah. Yep. So it's great to have you on the podcast. We're wondering about a lot of things about your art and stuff like that and how you got involved with Voltron. So let's start at the beginning. How did you become an artist in the first place?
Oh, wow. I actually started drawing when I was a wee little baby. I was, yeah, like a little kid. I started drawing. My mom is an artist. And so watching her draw kind of got me to start drawing. And then seeing my family, my brothers as well, they were also artists for a while. And I started jumping into that. And I got really serious about it when I discovered anime.
All right.
Yeah. And so because of that, I was just like, I have to start doing more of this. And I found a really nice escape in art and, you know, expressing ideas and emotion through color. And I personally find that, like, that's the most therapeutic way for me, myself, to express myself without being extremely over destructive or violent, because that was a thing that happened when I was a wee little kid.
And so you mentioned anime being a source of inspiration. What are some of your favorite titles?
Oh, geez, don't ask me that question. That's like asking, what's your favorite child? Oh, man. That is a big question. Okay, I'm going to, just to cut for time, I'll just say my current favorites right now. I was really, and I kind of still am, really into Attack on Titan right now. I think that's, like, the anime a lot of people are going to if, you know, you want to watch something that's particularly shocking or intense. There's also My Hero Academia. That one caught my surprise. I didn't expect to like it so much. Mm-hmm. But I fell for it immediately. Haikyuu is another one. I love, like, anime that are just, I love it when there's a theme of, you know, you've got, like, maybe a hopeless situation, but you've got, like, all these protagonists that come together and work hard and fight hard and, you know, put in all their efforts to get to a huge result and succeed in their goals and their wishes. So that's a big thing for me. And that's actually why I ended up getting into Voltron too.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into Voltron?
Well, actually, surprisingly, and I'm kind of ashamed to say this, but the first time I watched Voltron, I was kind of just in the middle of working because I work from home for I've always been working from home for a long time now. But at the time, I was working for a different company, and while I was working with them, I would just watch Netflix to pass the time. And I got into Voltron just because it popped up on my recommended, and I'm like, okay, let's see, it's this show. And it kind of like it rung a bell because I ended up finding out that when I was itty bitty. Like a baby in diapers, my brothers would watch it and they would bring me to watch the old school Voltron on TV. And so like, it would just, I just kept looking at it like, why is this so familiar? So I started watching it. And hilariously enough, the first episode did not catch my attention. I just kind of like, oh, this is such a kid show. And then I just moved on.
Wow.
I know. It's so hard to admit, but it's true. Like I was just kind of like, oh, okay, this is cute. It's nice. The animation's cool, but I guess I'll move on. And it wasn't until I actually started, okay, let's give this a proper shot. That it wasn't, I think, until the episode Crystal Venom that hooked me. It hooked me in. And I was like, okay, I have to keep watching this. And this was when the season one had come out for just, I think, about a month.
Uh-huh.
And so I remember just coasting through the episodes expecting like, okay, this is probably still ongoing. And then episode 13 finished and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? And then the whole thing popped out. It's like season two is not out yet. Here's some other recommended titles. And I had a moment of panic because I couldn't believe that was it. You know, they just ended it on this crazy cliffhanger and you're just like, wait, what? And I remember I jumped on Tumblr and I was like, what is going on? Where is season two? When is this thing coming out? No, it was madness. It was madness for me. And then from there, I just submersed myself completely into Voltron. It's just been a crazy ride for me.
So what was the first thing that you drew about Voltron?
Oh, that's a really fun answer for you. The first thing I drew for them was Keith and Pidge. I have this piece. Yeah, Keith and Pidge. I have a piece for them specifically just kind of like the whole shipping thing. I think we already talk about it for a second. I'm much of a shipper. I love shipping. I love the idea of shipping. It's so much fun for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that there was all this art for different types of ships and stuff, and I was like, okay, but I love Pidge and I love Keith. Why isn't there anything for them? And so this one time I was just doodling and I doodled the both of them. And since then I posted it on Tumblr and all of a sudden, like my follower count shot up like 2,000 people.
Wow.
It was crazy. And so since then I just started, okay, I really like drawing this. People really like watching me draw this. So I guess I'll just keep drawing Keith and Pidge. And then from Keith and Pidge, it expanded to Allura and Shiro and also Lance and Hunk and then the others. And oh my gosh, it's been just such a journey drawing for this show.
So how many pieces would you say you've done by now?
I have to count.
You don't have to. I'm just
okay.
Ballpark it.
Ballpark. I want to say grand total from like that's counting all my work in progresses and the things that I've not posted up and the things that I've posted, like everything. I would say around 50 pieces.
Okay. Wow. It looks like you've got about 40 if you count some of your promotional images on DeviantArt alone. So that's pretty amazing.
It's been a lot.
You've got a lot of stuff out on DeviantArt. Where would you say people could really go if they wanted to see like the whole breadth of your collection?
Definitely DeviantArt. I used to have a Tumblr, but I deleted some time ago just because I felt it was time to move on from that place. It was a good place for me for a while, but definitely DeviantArt. That's where I'm going to be putting the bulk of my work there. I'll also be occasionally dropping things on my Patreon and also on Twitter.
Okay.
Just so people can see, especially my works in progress is, for instance, I don't usually post those except on Patreon. So if anybody wants to see any of those, you guys can definitely follow me on Patreon for that.
Okay.
All right. Where can they go? Is there a URL or something like that that they can go to for that?
Absolutely. So on my Twitter bio, you'll be able to find like in my description, I have a few links there. And one of the first links is the link for my Patreon.
All right.
All right. What is your Twitter handle?
It is, just to make sure, because I recently switched it over. Let me go make sure, because this will be embarrassing. People are like, wait, what? That's not it. You're a liar.
See, I already know all this stuff. I just want to make it sure it's coming from you, so everybody trusts you with it, not me.
Okay. So correctly, I'm going to correct it. My Twitter handle is @KLionheart_art. So if you guys want to find my art and everything there, it's all there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Mm-hmm. So now they know where to find you. Let's talk about some of the pieces that you've already done in the past and maybe talk about some of the ones that have been the most popular and how would you know that those are the most popular?
Yeah, very good questions. So I've always been, like I said, I'm such a weeb. I love anime. I've always done love certain things like that. And one of my biggest niche, like the things that I love the most for anime is just like kind of sci-fi, space sci-fi especially. So Voltron landed perfectly in my little heart because I was such a huge fan of Gundam Wing when I was a kid. So because of that, I got inspired to do like a little crossover, which is why I ended up doing the kind of the Gundam Wing crossover with Voltron pieces that you guys can usually see on my DeviantArt. It's the one where you can see like Lance's, you know, picture, and then on in the back you see like his head, and then there's just kind of like a full body and then a headshot. And then similarly with Hunk and Pidge and Keith and Shiro, who I lovingly called Shiro Huey for specifically for this particular project. So that was actually a really good training exercise for me because I was working on different compositions and, you know, posing and that sort of thing. So that all worked out for me as a warm-up and also as a fun project to do on the side.
Okay.
So that's that one. And then I've done... Oh, yeah. I recently started doing the kind of like my t-shirt designs because I really like the idea of having something, you know, you could have like corporeal, like something you could wear. And so I started doing kind of like the V series, a kind of high contrast shadows where we have the characters and, you know, having their headshots with the Voltron symbol underneath with their names kind of sort of like in a watermark over their heads to just kind of characterize them. And also they're place in a gradient, so it kind of pops out really cool and it transfers really well into a t-shirt. I've had some people already purchase some t-shirts from my Redbubble. By the way, you can also find my Redbubble on my bio on Twitter.
Okay.
And I honestly, for that particular piece, I think my most popular for the t-shirt series has been Lotor.
Oh
cool.
I gotta tell you, since season 5 came out, there's been a lot of fans who have gravitated to Lotor. Obviously the storyline has gotten to the point where, wow, Lotor's working together with the Paladins. And wow, AJ Lucasio's performance in season 5 was amazing. You know, so these are the types of things that we're getting from the fans. And people are really liking Lotor right now.
Oh, I love to hate him. I do.
He really is quite a thing.
I adore him. He's such a versatile character. I was expecting like evil Azula kind of character, you know, from Avatar Last Airbender sort of deal. But Lotor has just surprised me in terms of like the levels of complexity that he has. And I feel like I'd like to give a quick shout out to the writers of Voltron to just continue to deliver such impressive complexities with all these characters. They all have so many layers and so many shades and hues to them that it's so much fun to watch and rewatch and rewatch the episodes to just kind of discover every little thing that we can find underneath and theorize about it. I feel like that's one of the most fun things for me about Voltron. It's just there's so much to touch on and you have to watch the episodes over and over again just to get to any of it. You know, it's fantastic. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, we kind of like it too.
I hope so.
We were talking about how would you know about the popularity of your pieces of art?
Let's see. So the cool thing about DeviantArt is I can kind of see the stats for the pieces that I post up, but also just kind of the amount of notifications I get. For the most part, I feel like one of the most popular pieces I did that was like incredibly well received was honestly just a little fun work doodle that I was just messing around with that as Shiro and Keith kind of together. In just kind of like just a shot of Shiro just kind of placing his head on Keith's shoulder and he's like all flustered because I just love the idea of like Shiro maybe saying something super embarrassing or something and stumbling over something and then he just collapses into a fit of nerves because that's usually what I do when I get embarrassed. And then I feel like that was something that people really, really enjoyed. And so that blew up, even though that only took me like maybe 20 minutes versus all the other works that it's taking me like literally hours to do. So that's funny.
Okay. Is there anything in particular that you loved to do? And, you know, even though it may not have been as popular as some of your other stuff, it holds a special place in your heart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually recently, because I'm a sucker for crossovers. So when the whole theory of, it was like, I think in an interview that they mentioned where during the concept of the characters for Voltron, they had considered giving Keith white hair. And so that kind of sparked just like a little miniature movement in the fandom where people just started drawing Keith with white hair and all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of took a different approach to that idea. And I thought of, like, because I saw we see this character with black hair and all of a sudden he's got white hair. And the first thing that hit me was, oh, Tokyo Ghoul. So I did another one of those. And I actually did kind of this Tokyo Ghoul inspired, you know, dual piece of Keith kind of as one of those, you know, in a ghoul like setting sort of thing. And that one actually was more of an experimental work for me because I usually work just with my typical work processes. I draw a sketch, I line art it, I color it, I add some stuff to it, and that's about it. But with this one, I kind of went a more kind of like a paint like route with it on Photoshop and, you know, Sai and everything. And I just kind of, instead of going with a line art, I just went straight to color and I just started painting. And that one kind of blew up in a way that I didn't expect in terms of the quality, I guess. And so because it was so new for me, and because I also really enjoyed like the catharticism of just getting in there and just painting this really pretty picture, and then I could just like flip it over and do some white hair stuff to it. That ended up being my own personal favorite piece. There are actually two where you kind of see like Keith in that sort of Tokyo Ghoul kind of look. And then the white haired Keith that kind of represents the darker side of him or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the kind of person that enjoys to explore that. I love exploring the darker sides of characters that don't quite appear immediately to the public eye. So that's kind of something I really enjoy doing.
Yeah, you got some amazing, I think I see the piece you're talking about on your DeviantArt site, and it's, wow, it's just amazing. It just really pops, and I can see that you're going into a different place than the TV show does, certainly. It's really cool.
Yeah, I love being able to explore different sides to everything. I feel like with art, that's what you can do. If you're feeling stuck with your art, consider doing something completely different, something that you never thought you'd be able to do. And you never know, it could be like, it could take you in a completely different direction and it'll change you as an artist. I feel like that's something that I definitely was able to do with this piece particularly.
Okay.
It's cool.
All right. Now let's talk about, you had mentioned a little bit about your process.
Mm-hmm.
When you sketch, what do you sketch on?
So I used to do sketch to paper and then scan to my computer because I didn't have a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually, since I got a Wacom tablet, I've been primarily just, I almost always just sketch on either Photoshop. I actually used to use Photoshop. So now it's either Sai or Clip Studio. And Clip Studio is actually winning my heart a lot because it's just such a versatile program. So yeah, I mostly just kind of work directly to digital in terms of my art.
Okay, so Clip Studio, huh?
Oh yeah, definitely recommend that one. Like, it's super worth it. There's a learning curve. I definitely think if you're gonna, for any artist out there that's listening in, if you're gonna, you know, if you're looking for a different program, something that, you know, will give you a lot of tools and a lot of really cool things that you can do, it is such an impressive like program because it has so many things that you can do. It's got that learning curve, but once you get it, the sky's the limit, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I think you're the first fan artist we've had on who's actually recommended that. So that's very interesting.
Absolutely.
So how long of a transition was it going from sketch to paper and scanning to doing the digital art?
Oh, man, that's crazy. I guess it's because throughout the majority of my teenage years, I just kind of had paper and pencils and, you know, I scanned it to Photoshop and I only had a mouse. So I'd basically destroy my wrist trying to digitally color anything. And so it wasn't until I went to college several years ago that some guy was like selling his tablet for like $100. And I just jumped on that opportunity and I immediately purchased it straight from him. And since then, I just have never gone back. I absolutely love drawing on my tablet. And it was definitely weird going mm-hmm. from like looking directly at what I'm drawing to like drawing on a tablet and then seeing it happen in a completely different screen altogether.
Right.
And yeah, like that is so, it was weird to get used to, but once I got the hang of it, it was pretty impressive. I definitely love to like try the new approaches that they have now, like a Cintiq. I've been saving up for one of those. I definitely want to get those on because that would just be a dream, to be honest.
Because that's what the professionals use, right?
Yeah, they use different types of kind of like iPads. Just you draw straight on the screen and then that it just appears directly on screen. So as you're drawing, it feels like you're drawing on paper.
Mm-hmm.
versus drawing on a actual tablet, which kind of causes some, I mean, personally with me, I've noticed that if I were to draw like line art, there are certain times where like my attempts to draw a stroke will end up going a little like further off a different way. So I have to control Z like crazy just to get certain lines right. I would love to just get rid of that problem altogether. So looking forward to that transition.
That would be nice. Sure. I had one many years ago and I really enjoyed it, but that disconnect was very jarring to me and I don't think quite got over it. Now I don't pursue art nearly as much as you do, obviously. I just dabbled with it and haven't really done much in a long time, but mm-hmm. that disconnect was an issue for me. So I can imagine how a Cintiq would be a godsend.
Oh, absolutely. Like my brother right now, he has been recommending me to get like at least an iPad or something, because with the iPad, you can actually get Clip Studio, like the application on the iPad, mm-hmm. which is, I think is pretty great because again, like I just cannot recommend Clip Studio enough. It is such an amazing program. And I've been really kind of working on trying to get something like that so I can get my hands in and just start working a little more seriously, a little more control, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Now, there are some artists out there that are finding that their strengths are with figures, with characters and stuff like that, whereas some other artists are good with backgrounds and props and stuff like that. So where do you find your strength?
Ah, that's a good question. I feel like I've been primarily drawing people and, you know, things. I like drawing figures and things like that, but I've actually been recently dabbling in more background art. If you'll allow me to plug in a little thing, I've been working on a little comic of my own, a little web comic. It's, you can read it on Webtoons. You can find it on Tapas. It's called School Service. Originally it was a fan comic for Voltron, but there was a time where I was really scared I was going to get sued just for posting it. So I made a bunch of changes to the names and everything just so like I could avoid that problem. Cause it was like, I had a friend, she told me, he's like, no, you're going to get sued. And I was like, no, I can't get sued. I'm only 25. It was crazy. And so we decided to just kind of play it safe. And a lot of things are like similar, but I've decided to steer away from it a lot, you know, kind of take it in a different direction. And with that project, it's definitely forced me to become more adapted to drawing my own backgrounds. And so since I started drawing backgrounds, and since I started doing all of that, I've actually matured more as an artist because I've stopped being scared of it. I've stopped allowing myself to be lazy mm-hmm. with certain things. And I feel like when you have a project big enough that calls for a level of passion, it demands discipline. And so that's something that I also learned in doing. So again, I owe so much to Voltron because it inspired so many projects, so many things, and it's allowed me as a person to evolve as an artist because now I'm drawing backgrounds and things, and like I'm able to do a lot of those backgrounds on my own without much reference now because I've made myself kind of get into that position, start understanding and really research and buy books on backgrounds and those sort of things so I can become a better artist. It's crazy. I actually recently made like a quick background sketch because there's a video game. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's called Ori and the Blind Forest.
What is it?
I have not personally, but
Ori and the Blind Forest.
No, have not heard of it.
Highly recommend that game. It is phenomenal. It's a gorgeous game. Gorgeous, gorgeous game.
Okay.
And it's so visually appealing that I kind of gave it a little shot at drawing my own little background for the game itself, just because of a little scene that I saw that I liked. Mm-hmm. And that was an entirely new experience for me. And I think I nailed it pretty good. And so, yeah, like you get inspiration where you can. And yeah, backgrounds are definitely something that I've had to learn to do. But I think, I don't know, I feel like when it comes to what your own niche is, I feel like the biggest problem most people, especially young budding artists, deal with is kind of trying to break into new things that they are not so comfortable with
mm-hmm.
because it demands so much learning. And so I definitely like, if you love art, if you love doing what you're doing, if you want to become better and you're finding yourself a little frustrated with where you are now, again, like try new things, even if it hurts. The growing pains are growth. So let the pain get you in a place where you're growing. That's for sure.
That's some great advice.
Yeah, and for people who want to start up their own comic and stuff like that, it's working on original characters that haven't been done before, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've had to, considering the fact that I have this webcomic and I've got some other ideas and stuff, since I started doing this, I've kind of gotten like a surplus of inspiration sort of with different comics that I want to try now and different things. And so I've been drawing a lot since I started this little project of my own. And I've been working with my brother on a different comic series that we're yet to debut because we're working on a lot of the concept right now. But it's due to come out later this year. I can't release any information about that right now, but from what's going on right now, it's going to be super crazy, like in terms of how crazy this project is. I think I said crazy way too many times, but it is. It's an insane project, and I'm really happy that through what I've learned already, it's kind of taking me to this road.
Okay. That sounds promising.
That's cool. Yeah. Would it be all right if we post a link to your current webcomic? And if you'd keep us in the loop on your upcoming project there, we'd love to see what's going on.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. You guys are more than welcome to do that.
Awesome. Thanks.
We really want to talk about something that you did that's completely brand new.
Oh, yes.
Completely exclusive to this podcast. This is just an amazing piece. And we are always so excited about this. Whenever we have a Voltron fan artist spotlight, we are so excited to have brand new art made just for this. So can you tell us a little bit about this piece? Let's start with the name.
Okay.
And then people will try to figure out, I guess, what it's all about from that. But after that, tell us how it got started and where your ideas came in and then how you brought it to where it is now.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's do this. Okay. I'm excited. Whew. Okay, so this piece, I named it Dungeons and Voltron. And I don't, for those of you who may not know, there's kind of been a period where Dungeons and Dragons has kind of gained a lot of popularity again. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a super fun thing. It's like a role-playing game. It's insane. If you've read a bunch of crazy Dungeons and Dragons stories, if you haven't tried Dungeons and Dragons, I highly recommend it. It's super fun. And with this idea, it's actually funny because before when you guys invited me on this and you guys asked me, like, hey, so if you can make a new piece, go for it. Like, it could be about anything. I started thinking, I was like, okay, what can I do? And the idea of kind of having a Dungeons and Dragons thing kind of stuck out to me. And I kind of cheated and went online and I made a tweet and I asked people what they would think, like how they would classify the Voltron characters as characters in Dungeons and Dragons. And I got a few responses from that definitely inspired the end result for this piece, specifically with the positions and the importance of it all. And I wanted to focus on kind of like merging more in the with the sci-fi of Voltron into this kind of super crazy Dungeons and Dragon-y kind of situation. So I took a lot of creative liberties in how to demonstrate these characters in these different classifications. In its preparation, I was like, I just suddenly got an influx of ideas. I was like, ooh, what if I do this? Ooh, what if I make it into a comic panel? Ooh, what if I put characters in the panels and then I put the main cast in front of it? It's going to be the coolest thing ever. like, oh my gosh, it is. Honestly, I've had such a blast with this piece.
So there's a lot going on in here. So let's start with our main characters, okay? So you've got them in the forefront, in front of these comic panels. And how did you decide which character was going to be which D&D character?
So again, like when I made that post, I was kind of thinking what to classify each character as. I immediately knew I was going to make Karan a bard.
Okay.
Just immediately. That was just hands down, like no contest. Karan's definitely going to be a bard. And then when I made that post on Twitter, I had somebody give me a very, very kind of insightful series of just like lists of like what these characters would best fit as. And so just to start off from the top and moving our way down, I made Shiro. Shiro's our paladin, of course, because, you know.
Okay.
He's already such a good paladin. Underneath that, we have got Allura. She's our elf druid, kind of elemency user. She's very strong with those. And I kind of wanted to give her a very powerful sort of spell casting look.
Mm-hmm.
Beneath her, we've got Hunk. Hunk is our cleric, and I wanted to give him a very fun kind of look, but at the same time, I gave him this book, and the joke about the book itself that I'm in a D&D campaign right now with a few friends, and one of our guys is a cleric, and he always, like, walks around with this massive, massive book, and we're always like, dude, this thing's gonna, like, weigh you down. Leave the book behind. And so eventually he uses this, but like, this thing is like, he could shift the size of the book. I don't know. Anyway, at one point we use it as a canoe, the book as a canoe. And so I wanted to kind of, just throw in a little inside joke there, because I know as soon as I show it to my friends, they're going to catch it and they're going to just start laughing. So that's a little inside joke there with Hank holding this little spellcasting book. Beneath him, we've got Lance, and Lance is our ranger kind of archer character. I love being able to, again, with him, I had a lot of fun because I wanted to merge that sci-fi with the fantasy. And so I gave him this bow that is mostly kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super, like, if you, like, look in, and it, again, this piece is so hecking massive. It's so huge. So you zoom in a little closer, and you can just see that the bow and the line and everything is just kind of, it's not entirely held together. And so since rangers have so many different abilities, and they're really good with weapons, I kind of, like, in my head, I gave them this weapon that is just sort of like a handle that can turn into a bow, where it can turn into a bow staff. It can turn into whatever weapon Lance needs, and kind of, like, working the idea of the Bayard into this little weapon that I gave him.
But I really like it. It's awesome. I know.
Isn't it so cool? I'm just so excited. Okay. Okay. Moving downwards, we're going to go to Pidge. Pidge is our engineer, but I also kind of wanted to give her, you know, more or less kind of like that rangerish sort of outfit as well to kind of work with Lance. I was going to make her a dwarf, but I changed my mind at the last second because
it's just too obvious, right?
I would have been way too obvious. It's crazy. But I mean, at the same time, I have no idea if I like was going to give her a beard or not. So I decided to not do the dwarf idea. That would have been a bit crazy. And then moving over to our last character on the right would be, you know, we've got our rogue, and it's Keith. Keith's our assassin like rogue here. And I wanted to kind of touch on a lot of the colors and the color scheme that is used for his Blade of Marmora outfit, because I feel like he's definitely shown a lot of growth in there. So I wanted to pay a lot of, like, I wanted to pay an homage to his growth as a character and his growth as, you know, as an individual fighter, especially now that he is, you know, part of the Blades. And so I focus on that for him. And of course, we've got a little Coran bard in the front. Mm. And if you look in a little closer, you can see Rover. Rover's just over Coran's little shoulder.
Yes. I see that.
So yeah, that's awesome. It's crazy. The amount of detail I've placed into this is, I've never done this much before. I had so much fun. So that's our main cast.
Yeah. And that's in the foreground layer, right?
Yes. So we've got, oh man, the amount of layers. Don't ask me how many layers I have, dude, because it's way too many.
Okay. So in the background, we have six different panels from a comic book, right?
That's right.
And then you've got the actual, the title text, Voltron Legendary Defender there.
Mm-hmm. I do. Sort of through that, there's kind of last minute, just to kind of like put something there to tie it all in together before I continued working, because I wanted to have something that brings it all together. And I feel like adding a title is, you know, you've got, when you've got a manga or you've got like a webcomic or you've got a comic in general, you have like the introductory posters when you first turn that page, and then you see the, you know, title drop. And I kind of wanted to do that there in a smart sort of way, so it doesn't, you know, look odd.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to call it Dungeons and Voltron, but I really like the way it, like the Voltron Legendary Defender looks, because it just genuinely feels like it's part of it. And I also like found the font. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you find the font?
I Googled it.
So what's the name of the font?
So it's called the Dale Lands Unseal.
Wow.
Font.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a mouthful. Yeah, it's crazy. I found it, downloaded it, bam. There's our font. There's our title.
Okay, let's start in the top left comic panel. We got Zarkon, right?
Cool. Okay, we've got Zarkon. And Zarkon, I was thinking about how he would look like in a Dungeons & Dragons kind of environment. And I immediately thought Dragonborn. He's such a Dragonborn. Like, definitely just
okay.
So draconic, because he's terrifying. And Dragonborns are, like, incredibly powerful and just terrifying, you know? So I went with, I changed some of the design also to his helmet and his armor. I used a base screen cap to kind of, like, reference for the position and everything. But then I played around with things. I definitely wanted to work in an armor that felt more reptilian, I guess, than what we see in the actual series. And I gave him, with his skin, I kind of wanted to work different sort of textures and colors in there. when I showed one of my friends that she made, he's like, oh, does he have vitiligo? And I was like, I guess. So I guess he's got that now. So yeah, he definitely looks cool here. I really love how it came
texture.
Out.
It's really, really cool.
I know. There's so much I want to do with it still. And I'm going to like dig my hands a little more into it. Absolutely. But right now I'm like, I'm really, really happy with how it's all coming out with Zarkon.
Okay. And then in the panel below that is Lotor.
Mm-hmm. We've got Lotor. I decided to give him the classification of sorcerer.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to kind of tie in with the whole elf sort of tiefling feel. I wasn't entirely too sure if I should have made him a tiefling or not, but I like the idea of him kind of being like a dark elf, along with Hagar in the other panel that we're going to get to in a bit. I gave him the same kind of skin color.
I'm sorry, you gave him the same kind of skin color as what?
Yeah, I gave them, I wanted them to share a skin color to kind of tie them in together as a species, but also to be like, you know, mother and son.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to kind of have a similar color scheme for the both of them without making them blend too much together. So yeah, Lotor is definitely our little sorcerer there. He's kind of having this sort of mischievous, sort of devious look to him. And I feel like that's my favorite part of Lotor is that we've got this character who's just... We don't know what his real intentions are, man. And I know that the creators and the crew are saying, oh, no, he's definitely got a lot of genuine parts of him. And I believe it. But this dude has been alive for 10,000 years. So I'm pretty sure he knows how to act really well. I don't trust him for a second. And I love that. I love that so much. So I wanted to really kind of show that initial feeling that we got when we first met him, where he just like has this little smug smirk to himself. And I wanted to show that. I definitely wanted to capture this mischievous deviousness to him like we had gotten when we first met him, and to show that this is a character who's definitely knows where he wants to be and how to get there. Mm. So that's the feeling I put in there when I was drawing him.
Okay.
And I think you've that comes across definitely.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
You go down a panel below him and you've got three characters in there, right? Actually, four.
We got four.
Let's count Beezer as a character here. So there's actually four characters in there. Can you talk about them?
Okay, so the four characters that I put in there, obviously, we've got Matt, we've got Slav, we've got Olya, and we've got Beezer. And I wanted to kind of sum up the characters for the Rebel Fighters together in this little panel here.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted also just because I really, really ended up liking Olya's character so much. I did not expect to, so I had to put her in there. Beezer, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Beezer's our little robot. And Slav, you can't have Voltron without Slav.
Right.
Precious Slav.
Or any other reality, yep.
He's in every reality. He's in every reality.
Right. And I like how you have Matt almost like saluting.
Yeah! I wanted to kind of make it seem like they're taking a picture, and Beezer's the one that's like taking the picture with them. I wanted to kind of have like a little bit of whimsy into these poses here, because like everybody else is like so serious and like we're gonna go and face into battle, and then we've got them taking a selfie. I love it.
Yeah. All right. So we go up to the top right, and we've got Hagar, and who's that other character?
Gee, I wonder. Okay. So for this other character, so we got Hagar. And we've got a Shiro, but I mean, for the sake of, you know, understanding, I think we're gonna talk about Shiro under the influence of Operation Kudon. And so we're gonna call him Kudon.
Yep.
For the sake of everything. I know, I mean, in my heart, I wanna call him Shiro, because even though there's just a tangle of emotions with that particular little drop in information that they gave us recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. I also wanted to show something that really hit me in the first season when we see, you know, Shiro go up against Hagar for the first time. There's a moment where she kind of transforms into him, and she kind of like holds him by the throat. He's like, now I will destroy you. And he starts laughing. And then we see how he's got like this glow in his eyes. I feel like that was the first time they were outright telling us that she has some kind of thing going on. Like, she was the mastermind behind this whole Operation Kudon thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of interesting how that's playing out. And so I really wanted to kind of show that off as well, that there's these two sides. We've got so many sides of Shiro here. And then we've got, obviously, this moment where Shiro I gave him this expression of kind of not being himself, sort of kind of like a doll.
Right.
Because right. in recent, yeah, in these recent episodes, we're seeing how he's kind of struggling with finding himself. He's not entirely sure what's going on with him. Joaquin Dos Santos made a very good point on one of his interviews when he says that we're seeing a lot more of this PTSD coming out in Shiro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such PTSD. I actually personally struggled with PTSD for a while. And so it changes you as a person. And there's so much to that that I really enjoy trying to convey that in just one single image. And so to show that there is this sort of struggle there, that there is this emptiness there, there's this emptiness there with Shiro and the fact that, you know, is he the real Shiro? Is he not? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I painted that there, and I definitely have Hagar in the forefront of that particular image because, of course, she's got to be the one who's, you know, pulling the string. She's the puppet master.
Right. And he's got the one yellow eye, which means yep. that she can see right through that.
Absolutely. Isn't that yeah. fun?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so much fun.
All right. So let's go down to the generals right below that.
The generals. Ah, oh, I love these girls.
And you've got the cat Nardi back again.
I have to. You can't have.
Yes.
You can't have the full set without Nardi and cat.
Right.
I love them. I honestly really enjoyed the characters a lot more than I expected to.
Mm-hmm.
So with this one, I'm more or less kind of giving more. I just want to see what you guys think. Is there classifications or what sort of things they are?
Wow.
I have to confess, I have not played D&D in over 25 years. I'm that old. And so I haven't done active RPGs at all in that time. So I am so out of touch, I couldn't even begin to guess. And I apologize for that.
I am broken. I know. Brokenhearted.
I know.
I believed in you.
There's not a whole lot of room here for each of them to have an obvious from what they're wearing and everything. So I'm having a hard time with this. Can you give me a hint?
Okay, well, let's see. How do I put this? They're definitely roguish, I want to say. I definitely wanted to kind of...
They were like Lotor's rogues gallery.
Yeah. And so I like the idea of them kind of being their own little band of ne'er-do-wells, you know, just doing a bunch of kind of crazy stuff in the background and stuff. So I definitely kind of bunched them up in a sort of roguish kind of classification. But in terms of like what they are in terms of races, I'm leaving that really open to the public to see what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
With Nardi for sure, definitely kind of touched a little more on the idea of dragonborn / tiefling, because I know tieflings are, you know, with warlocks, they have like familiars. And so I like the idea of her being the warlock of the group, where she's got this familiar and she uses it to, you know, help the team out. I played with the idea of Zethrid being an orc, but I don't want to give her too much of an orcish look. So I like that idea. I don't know how much I'm going to change that design, but for sure there's that kind of like orcish inspiration to her character there.
So what is Ezor in this one?
Ezor, I was kind of curious. Because I had various different ideas of what I wanted her to be, but for now I'm gonna keep it sort of to myself, and I want to see what people end up deciding she is, and see like, oh no, she's this, oh no, she's that, and then based on what they say, I kind of want to see how my idea ended up being translated, and if it did or if it didn't. So
okay,
I'll keep that little fun thing for myself.
Cool. Okay, and in the panel below that, what is that?
That's Kolovan.
Yeah, that's Kolovan.
Oh, it yep. is. Oh, okay.
Yes, you got Kolovan and Krolia and some nondescript blades in the background.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They
are awesome.
Wow.
And I love the way that you have Krolia looking away. Why did you yes. do that?
Oh, man, I wanted to definitely pay the homage of she's been this character who we've all thought about. Since we found out that Keith has been, you know, alone, and how, you know, with the vlogs, you know, when we discovered that his mom left and then that we don't know what happened to his dad. And so he's basically been left off on his own. And so she's this invisible force that's kind of made him into a different person. And then I think through the like ties of fate really brought Keith's character back to his mother in such an interesting way. And I love how they did that. And so with this particularly, I kind of wanted to show her as this, we see her, we kind of know who she is now, but we still don't know anything about her, really. Just that she is a presence in the Blade of Mormora, And now that we know that Keith is kind of wearing the same outfit here with the Rogues in the forefront, there's that similarity in their colors and the way that the suits are. I wanted to kind of connect them in that way.
I like that you did that. There's that purple bridging element there between Krolia and Kolovan. I really like that.
Yeah. I love the idea of being able to kind of, you know, especially with hair, because hair is such a thing. It really is. It's such a fun thing for me to mess with. Mm-hmm. But I liked being able to kind of use that as a tether that ties her to Kolovan. And I've read so many theories about their relationship. Somebody mentioned that Kolovan could possibly be Keith's grandfather.
What?
I know. Idea. It is a crazy theory, but like, I was like, I don't know.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's a theory I heard, and I was like, I don't know about that, but it's been kind of like, maybe, what if, you know, because there's so much focus on like Kolovan trying to steer Keith and you have to keep your emotions away from the mission kind of thing. And it just just kind of feels like he's trying to, for the sake of making sure that this doesn't happen to him. I mean, the Blade's off, like they, you can tell that they lose so many members and they cannot afford to grieve them. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like that's something that we're seeing that Kolovan definitely has a heavier hand in being with Keith. Keith is almost always next to him whenever we see Kolovan. And so the fact that there is this connection there between them, the fact that, you know, obviously Keith is part Galra now, spoiler alert, but there's that. So I like to play with that idea. I don't want to translate it too much into this, but there's definitely something there that I wanted to kind of just very subtly tie them together.
All right.
I do like it.
We had covered all the different characters that are in the middle and everything, and we covered the characters that were in each of the comic panels.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can just talk sort of a little bit about the backgrounds of those panels. Was there any other changes that you had made that would really show themselves from the previous one? You put a little sparkle at the end of Alora's fingers.
Yeah, I added a few little kind of additional, like super teeny tiny edits too, kind of like to show that magical ability there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to show them like they're both sort of like casting spells, which is cool.
Yeah.
I did add a like a glow around the main cast.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Where there's like color coded.
Right.
Right. I added that too. Because I was trying to think of a way to make them stand out.
There's a little bit of a purple glow around Shiro,
mm-hmm.
yellow around Hunk, blue around
Lance,
even though he's the red lion.
Yeah, I know right now, which is the thing is I kind of wanted to show a bit of more of a, it is tricky. I know it is tricky because I did want to kind of add that color scheme back to Lance since he is the red lion now.
Right.
But I didn't want to kind of put them in a sort of, in my head, kind of like where they're at that point in their team where they're still sort of in their initial like phases right now. So it's more or less the color scheme is more to kind of pay an homage to their original, you know, positions. Cause even though Alora is definitely the Blue Lion's paladin right now,
mm-hmm.
I did want her to like have her stand out as, you know, having her have this pink color, which is so Alora in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of the glows around the characters there really makes it stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the panels themselves, you had, you know, just the plain colored background sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you changed that to this sort of like this, I don't know, what kind of writing is it? How did you describe that writing again?
Yeah, it's called an obscure calligraphy brush.
Okay.
I was able to, because I've been looking for something that kind of gives it that sort of mystical, fantastical kind of look to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that with text, you can do that. So even though it's not like definitely a specific language, it looks close enough to a lot of different sort of ancient languages that it kind of passes for that. But I did notice that like some of them have like very, some characters that are very similar to like some kanji, like Japanese kanji, where you could kind of spot some that say, that could possibly say like courage or, you know, patience and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I liked that there was like that slight little tie in to patience and stuff. Cause you know, the whole patience yields focus and then you've got the whole courage as a theme. And so I really thought that was super cool that came together in that way.
It's sort of almost like a matrix type of look to it, you know, in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
The bright green against the black background in The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And then you have the characters that are slightly transparent and you can still see that background behind their faces.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So what was the reason for that?
Yeah, so the reason for that is just I did want them to kind of, I like the first version a lot, but also I wanted them to sort of blend in the background, kind of add a touch of mystery to the piece already. And I wanted to definitely put a central focus to the main cast because, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of stuff going on here in this piece.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things going on. And so instead of it kind of being a thing where you look at it and you're like, whoa, there's so much I got to look at first. I want the initial focus to just be, bam, the very central cast. And then it just makes it a lot easier on the ice for you to look at the other characters. I also applied stronger shading choices and lighting for the characters where you can kind of see that Shiro along in the panel with Hagar, you know, the witch kind of idea and her, you know, Kuron Shiro kind of character being
right.
This potential like dark agent thing. I wanted to definitely add a darker shadow on his face to kind of add that obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly with Zarkon and just kind of put a focus on the glow in their eyes. I definitely wanted there to be like an easier way to look at the picture without it being so overwhelming at first.
Right.
So I did add some shading. I added like a bit of a gradient, some darker parts too. If you look closely enough in the colors of the panels, it gets a little darker in some places.
Oh yeah.
You know, where it kind of gives in that extra mood to it all, you know, and especially I honestly have to say that one of my favorite panels of all time ended up being the one with the blades.
Yes.
Because I just love the way the lighting came out for that one because it's so cool. I love it.
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, this whole thing is just an amazing piece and it's several things all in one and it's a lot to take in all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Even the text that you have for Voltron Legendary Defender is very Dungeons and Dragons like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And then if you can tell also in the new version, I switched out the V.
Uh-huh.
So we could have the symbol, like Voltron symbol.
Right.
As the main one. I wanted to do that too. And I that was kind of a last second decision where I was like, wait, what if I put that there? And being able to plug that in there was kind of like the little icing on the cake, a little cherry on top. And I was very happy with how that worked out. So yeah, I'm very pleased with this piece. It's definitely a coup de grace.
It's beautiful. It's definitely beautiful.
Yes.
So thank you very much for that. That was great.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. I just had so much fun.
I got to say, there's a lot going on in here and there's a lot to talk about. And we did talk about it.
My gosh.
But I think the fans are really going to love this. And
oh, yeah.
I have to let everybody know this is the same thing that we always have done with the Voltron fan artists on the podcast. This is going to go out on the TeePublic store, and this is going to have 3 days, 72 hours worth of a sale. That's what happens on TeePublic whenever you introduce a new design. It gets 72 hours of a sale. So we're going to be announcing this as soon as this podcast comes out, and as soon as you hear it for the first time, you're going to know this piece is out there. It's called Dungeons and Voltron, and it's by Kay Lionheart.
Go forth and purchase the t-shirt.
But it's not just t-shirts.
Oh, man, it's going to be everything.
T-shirts and prints and
posters,
iPhone cases and
everything.
Everything. Posters, yeah. Pillows. Everything that you can think of. Stickers.
Oh, man.
All kinds of stuff.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, people are going to love this. They are definitely going to love this. You're going to get not only Voltron fans, you're going to get D&D fans.
I honestly need everybody to just see how awesome this is because, again, this took me, I think, a full week to work on.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Which is crazy. Like, full disclosure, I pulled a few all-nighters just because I couldn't.
Ooh.
I for the life of me, I have no self-restraint. So I could not put my computer down to get any sleep because I was like.
Did you have friends and family cursing us as the podcast for this?
No. I kind of just sort of like, hey, this is a project I'm doing for fun and giggles. Psych, I'm getting interviewed for this thing. And so, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, my family's actually been super supportive since I told them about this. And I absolutely love that. My mom and my parents actually are going to they told me that as soon as it comes out, they're gonna listen to it and they're gonna support me and they're gonna support this. And so this is such a huge deal for me.
Oh, cool.
And I had so much fun with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we love talking to artists and fans that do cosplay and fan fiction and songs and everything, you know. So we know Voltron has inspired a lot of people, and it's not only taken already creative people, it's made them more creative, like you had already said previously.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I just cannot express it enough that with this one piece, I think I've been able to overcome certain personal obstacles as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy how when you get a project that fills you with enough passion, you're able to overcome any obstacle. And so I feel like that's been it for me. Like, it's definitely been worth the all-nighters and the lack of sleep and, you know, just the nonstop, just like waking up early and going, okay, I got to keep going because I have no self-restraint.
Well, you have achieved the pinnacle. You have formed D&D Voltron.
I did it. Oh, man.
So thank you very much for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much again. I really am so grateful. Like, when you guys told me that you guys wanted to like bring me into this, I almost cried really because I was having such a lousy time being sick as a dog. And then you guys go like, hey, hope you're feeling better. By the way, we want you to like join us for a Fan Artist Spotlight. And I was like, they want me on the spotlight. It was crazy.
Well, that's great. That's great.
I've had so much fun. If I could do a quick little shout out, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Super fast shout out. I really want to do a quick shout out to three special people who have made this project for me so much easier. They've been my soundboard. They've allowed me to kind of jump back and forth between ideas and show quick breath drafts. So actually four people. So first person definitely is going to go to my brother Juan. He has been like the one who's allowed me to get this far. He was able to help me. He would, you know, I'd give me advice. Definitely a huge shout out to my brother. He's my inspiration. My soul brother, I love you, bro. Also, other shout out goes to a beautiful friend of mine named Myra. Myra, you can find her Ariam Jan. She has been such a great source of just support for me, especially when there were moments where I was like, I just don't think I can do it. I don't think I'm going to be able to finish this. Like, you can do it. So without her, I don't think I would have been able to complete this. Other shout outs go out to Kiss Matt Kelly on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
She has been, oh my gosh, she has been so amazing. She's helped me with, like, I've been able to send her like bits and pieces of the work, and she's, you know, given me advice for colors and certain things when I was struggling. And like, she was there when I was like ranting about eyebrows because for some reason I couldn't draw eyebrows for this piece, which is hilarious for a while. And finally, last shout out goes out to Orca Merms. Orca, you are amazing. I adore you. Thank you so much for helping me out and for keeping me sane while this project was making me go insane. And those are my shout outs. Thanks so much, everybody. You guys are the best.
That is cool. Thanks for sharing and shouting out.
Which one of those people told you to make sure you go to bed so you can get some sleep?
All of them. The amount of times I heard it. Cat, go to bed. And I was like, no.
We're ready to move on to our next segment of the podcast.
All right.
Let's do it. I'm excited.
We now return to Retro Voltron.
Welcome to another segment of Retro Voltron. And this is our third installment. And this is a bit of a change from what we've done the last couple times, in that we're actually going to listen to a piece of 1980s merchandise. What? Listen to merchandise? What does that mean? Well, back in the 1980s, it was very common for animated television programs for kids and for movies that were popular to kids, like Star Wars and all that, to have short stories and records, or short stories and cassettes. So a kid could read an illustrated short story and have it read to them, kind of like a radio drama, through a record or an audio cassette. Those crazy things from back in the Dark Ages, records and tapes. Well, Voltron had 4 book and cassette sets back in the 80s, and this is one of them. So I've been collecting these over the last several months, and this one has been digitized, the cassette has. This is from a book and cassette set called The Masked Robeast. And it's an adaptation of the 60th Lion Force episode of Voltron, Defender of the Universe, called Who Was That Masked Man? And unlike many book and record, book and tape sets of that time, this does contain some original voice actors from Voltron, Defender of the Universe, as well as some original music and sound effects from the show. So this is fun. It should be a great little nostalgia piece, and I hope everyone enjoys it.
This is the story of the Masked Robeast. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when you hear the chimes ring like this. Let's begin now. In the shadows of Planet Doom, all was silent except where Hagar the Witch gazed into a swirling crystal ball.
Those little hotshots of the Voltron Force think they're so good. They have a cause they believe in. But with the help of Prince Lotor, I can destroy them.
Far across space, a young man searched the horizon. He was Sven, formerly a member of the Voltron Force. Sven now lived on the planet Pollux, where he was helping Princess Romel and Prince Bandor build a dam. Suddenly, he spotted something.
Signal flags! Maybe Romel's in trouble!
He jumped on his horse and galloped to the dam, where he shouted to his workers,
Quick! Start the helicopter! I have got to get to the castle!
Sven climbed in next to the pilot, and they shot into the air. Immediately, Sven was on the radio.
Prince Bandor, tell Romel I'm on my way!
Bandor sent back a message.
No, Sven! Romel's fine! But there's been a crash in the valley! We'll meet you there!
Sven flew over the wreckage.
It's a slave ship from Planet Doom. I wonder what it's doing here.
When the helicopter landed, Sven ran to the scene, where he was joined by Romel and Bandor. Romel winced when she saw the injured slaves.
Oh, these poor people. What should we do, Sven?
What we must do. Protect them from Zarkon and his son Lotor.
Romel agreed.
Let's take them to the castle for treatment.
In the castle medical room, Sven and Princess Romel stood beside the bed of a mysterious masked slave.
Romel, help me take off his mask. He'll breathe easier without it.
Leave my mask alone. Once my face was handsome and fair, but Zarkon exposed me to terrible radiation. Now, I'm hideous.
Romel remembered when she and Sven were Zarkon's slaves.
We don't care what you look like. We just want to help you.
Suddenly, Prince Bandor burst through the door.
Sven! Your house is on fire!
Sven ran from the room, shouting to Bandor and Romel.
You two stay with the slaves! I'll handle this!
When Sven arrived at his cottage, a dark figure stepped out from behind the flames, grinning wickedly. It was Hagar, the witch.
Well done, Sven! By leaving Princess Romel at the castle, you've fallen into my trap!
At the castle, the slaves jumped from their beds. They weren't injured at all. Their masked leader held a gun on Romel.
We're taking over, and you are my special captive. Prince Lotor plans to trade you for your cousin, Allura.
On the planet Eris, Koran sat at his computer.
We've lost communication with Pollux. Something must have happened there.
Keith looked at Princess Allura.
That's where your cousin Romel lives.
Koran whirled around in his chair.
Launch the lions, quickly!
In moments, the 5 lion craft of the Voltron Force were on their way. When the lions appeared in the sky over Pollux, Hagar was holding Sven prisoner.
I knew your friends would come! Now I'll lure them in front of the dam! They'll be destroyed by tons of water!
Sven lunged at the old witch.
Oh!
She shot a ray beam from her staff, and Sven fell helplessly to the ground.
Oh.
Then she ducked into a cave, just as the Voltron team landed. Keith hopped out and saw Sven on his knees.
Sven, what's wrong?
I've decided to join Hagar and Zarkon. Their forces are stronger than ours. They rule the planet now.
Allura noticed Sven's wristwatch flashing. It was Sven's secret code, telling them Princess Romel was in trouble at the castle. That's why he was pretending to be on Hagar's side. Hagar came out of the cave.
How do you like seeing your friend on his knees? Soon you'll all be there with him.
She motioned her robot soldiers into place on the dam, high overhead. Prince Lotor's skull craft flew over the dam and landed nearby. He got out and strolled triumphantly over to the group.
So, Hagar, what do we have here?
5 hot-headed heroes and 2 princesses! My slaves are holding Romel captive in the castle!
At last, Allura will have no choice but to marry me!
Keith saw the opportunity to move.
Now, Sven, go!
Sven threw dirt in Hagar's face and ran with Keith. Lotor roared.
Get them! Blast them!
The robot soldiers fired their lasers, narrowly missing the pair. In the confusion, Princess Allura and the others broke for their lion craft. In moments, all 5 lions were in the air. Lotor and Hagar raced for their ships.
Quickly, Hagar! They're getting away!
Inside the castle, the masked slave pointed a gun at Princess Romel.
Prince Lotor is on his way. He has big plans for you.
Suddenly, the lights went out, and the 5 lion craft burst through the ceiling. The slaves dropped their guns and ran. Romel turned to Bandor.
Come on, let's follow the masked one.
Lotor and Hagar arrived just in time to see the lions fly back out of the castle, their weapons blazing. Keith radioed the evil-looking skull craft.
We've got you now, Lotor. Your slaves have escaped, and so have Romel and Bandor.
Angered by the news, Lotor contacted Hagar.
So much for your so-called trap. It's a complete failure.
Don't worry, Lotor. I'm not finished yet.
Hagar's eyes glowed as she pointed her staff and sent a ray beam shooting toward the castle. When it struck the masked slave, Hagar cackled with glee.
They thought you were a human, but now they'll see what you really are.
The mask and skin ripped away, revealing a metal superstructure beneath. The figure grew until it towered over the scene. A huge, one-eyed Robeast. Romel and Bandor dove for cover, but the Robeast saw them. It scooped them up, then shot off into the air. Pitch spotted the Robeast from his lion craft.
It's got them, Keith! What'll we do?
Keith was on the radio fast.
There's only one thing to do. Prepare to form Voltron. Activate interlock. Dinotherms connected. Infracells up. Mega thrusters are gone.
The lions flew into position.
4 feet and legs. 4 arms and body. And I'll form the head.
Striding across the sky came the familiar shape of Voltron, Defender of the Universe. A laser blast shot from the Robeast's eye, stopping Voltron in his tracks. In the Black Lion, Sven moved into the cockpit next to Keith.
We can't fight back! We'll hurt Romel and Bandor!
Once again, the Robeast fired a sizzling arc of energy, and once again it hit Voltron. Pidge yelled,
we have to do something!
Sven had an idea.
Keith, what if we cut off its claw?
But Romel and Bandor will fall! We'll have only a split second to catch them. Can you do it, Pidge?
You bet I can.
Keith gave the command.
Okay, team. Prepare wing slash attack.
A white blade went spinning toward the Robeast, slicing through its metal wing and freeing Bandor and Romel. As they tumbled toward the ground, Pidge rocketed forward in his green wand, catching them just before they crashed.
The enraged Robeast advanced on Voltron, pinning him against a cliff. But Voltron set a star beam shooting from his chest. As the Robeast staggered, Keith shouted,
"Form Blazing Sword!"
Voltron raised the gleaming weapon and set it crashing down on his evil foe. The Robeast fell to its knees, then exploded into a million pieces. Lotor watched from his skullcraft.
So, Voltron, you've rescued Princess Romer, but you haven't seen the last of me!
His ship flew off into the distance. Princess Allura hugged her cousin.
Romel, I'm so glad you and Vandor are safe.
I am too. We're lucky Voltron found us.
Allura turned to go.
Goodbye, cousin. Goodbye, Sven.
As she and the others climbed into their lions, Keith saluted his friends.
The Galaxy Alliance always works for peace and justice with the help of Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
That was the end of the story. If you would like to hear it again, turn the tape over.
Okay.
So turn the tape over. Holy cow. What are we waiting for? Turn that tape over.
Yeah, and gosh, I never owned these as a kid. I mean,
Jesus
I had a
priest.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of Voltron toys back then, but I never had any of these. So I literally heard this for the first time just days ago, and it was the same day that I sent it to Mark and said, we have got to listen to this on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
This is like audio gold.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
And, yeah, and so this is one of the episodes. I mentioned it was episode 60, Lion Force episode 60. And so it was one of the 20 episodes that was made just for Voltron. It was not adapted from Beast King Go Lion. You know, there's some debate about, you know, which of the episodes might have been better, the ones adapted from Go Lion versus the ones afterward and that were made later. Generally, the Go Lion adaptations are better received among the fans of the original show. And I think that this is definitely one of those plots that kind of points in that direction. So it's the whole thing, Hagar's slaves held everyone captive. I'm thinking,
oh my gosh.
Is if they were really her slaves, as soon as they were out of her sight, I think I'd be running.
Yeah, right? I mean, the entire time I was listening to this, I'm like, this is the craziest ride I've ever been on.
It is.
Like, I mean, I just kind of want to have that sound, like, turn the page. Like, I want that, like, in my everyday life. Like, as soon as I open a door, like, whoa.
I'm thinking that's got to be a ringtone.
Absolutely. I feel like I think people back in the 80s enjoyed things with such ardor. There's like no comparison right now. I mean, like even the fact that this is like, you know, for children back in the day, I'm listening to this and I'm like, this is the most intense thing ever. And that Scandinavian accent is horrific, but I am digging this.
Oh, yeah. So Mark, you've been quiet. What do you think?
Well, I was trying to look up in the Voltron from Days of Long Ago had the Robeast catalog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out what they had named that Robeast. Now, they had mentioned it was a one-eyed Robeast, right, in the story?
Yeah, I don't think they ever mentioned the name, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't mention the name of it, so I was trying to figure out if we could ascertain which Robeast it was, but I can't get a match for it.
I probably could because I actually had the illustrated book in front of me. The shorts, because yeah, it's a book and tape, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now I don't have my. Yeah,
that's so lucky.
Yeah. Now I'll have to look it up here in a little bit because I don't have my From Days of Long Ago book right next to me, but it is definitely in the Voltron From Days of Long Ago book. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that almost none of the Robeasts were actually named in Defender of the Universe. They were just
right.
Oh, here's my latest Robeast, right? So
right.
So the names were kind of invented for the From Days of Long Ago book, and you know, so much the better for it. It's fun. I do want to point out real quick that not all of the voices that you heard there were from Defender of the Universe, but many of them were. So Hagar the Witch and Sven and Bandor, Romel, Keith, Pidge, and Allura all were done by the original voice actors. So,
cool.
Yeah, so BJ Ward did the voices of Hagar, Princess Allura, and Princess Romel. Michael Bell was the voice of Sven, and Neil Ross was the voice of Prince Bandor, Keith, and Pidge. So it's really fun and very unusual for these things to have the original voice actors in them. I had the Star Wars adaptations when I was a kid, and none of the voices in there were the original actors. So it's really cool to get that here, and it really kicks up the nostalgia factor several notches.
Yeah, no kidding.
I was kind of surprised that they didn't have Lance, because Michael Bell also did Lance.
It's hard to tell whether these voices were recorded specifically for the book and tape set or if they used the dialogue that had been recorded for the episode itself. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I am a massive hardcore geek, but I have not compared the audio track of this with the episode. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
No, you're totally good. Given the fact that, this alone is probably like, I mean, the fact that it's a tape, that alone is like, I know tons of new Voltron fans are like, what's a tape? What do you mean turn it over? What does that mean?
It sounded really good for a tape, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was impressed. I was expecting way more in the middle of the sounds, but no, that was actually pretty good quality.
A 30-year-old tape actually sounded that good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
So I'll tell you that on the same night that I digitized this cassette, I digitized the other three cassettes. So I have all four of the book and tape sets. And the first three of them sounded great. The fourth one is definitely a little bit worse for wear, and the tape plays at an inconsistent speed. So I might go out on eBay and try to find a replacement tape. But the quality in general for these things, I mean, we're talking 33-year-old cassettes, is really phenomenal. I was really blown away.
I mean, given the fact that the quality is so good,
don't be too hard on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was all like such a fun ride.
I played an inconsistent speed too.
Story of my life too.
I think that's all of our lives, really.
Yeah. So I do want to give a shout out to our friend and fellow Voltron fan, Tara Scully, who kind of likes Sven from Voltron Defender of the Universe. This one's for you.
There you go.
And she likes it when you impersonate Sven, too.
Yeah, I actually met her finally face to face at New York Comic Con 2016.
And I did my Sven voice just for her.
And it was so much fun. And I have to tell you that I got really nostalgic listening to this tape and the other tapes for BJ Ward in particular. I love all of the voice, but of all the folks, the voice actors that we've not yet interviewed for the podcast that are still with us, I would so love for us to someday interview BJ Ward, because her Hagar delivery, I love all of the voices, Allura and Rommel and all that, but Hagar is absolutely my standout favorite of her characters, and I would love to get her insight into what happened in days of long ago when they made the show.
Right.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you can go from having a character sound like, yes, please, come help us immediately, to, you're all gonna die, dude. Like, that level of versatility is something to be completely commended to. And I would love to meet her and just be like, how is your throat now? Like, how do you feel after going through all, like, that craziness? Oh, it is fantastic. Voice acting to me is always going to be something so amazing. I love that.
Oh, yeah. And BJ Ward actually is a renowned singer and vocal performer in her own right. I mean, beyond voice acting. And,
oh, wow.
She's got several albums that are available. I will be picking up an album or two in hopes of one day talking with her about them. But yeah, I love all the performers back then. And of course, the people who were not in this particular tape, Jack Angel, who we've interviewed, and of course, Lenny Weinrib, who's no longer with us, and Tress McNeil.
Peter Cullen.
Yeah, Peter Cullen, absolutely. Optimus Prime himself.
Well, he was Karan, but in this one, it was a different actor for Karan.
Right. And so Lotor and Karan were not voiced by the original actors there. But then, of course, Tress McNeil, who would join Voltron in these later episodes as Queen Merla.
Queen Merla. Yes.
Yes.
Queen Merla.
Yes. Merla, Queen of Darkness.
I did get the chance to interview Tress McNeil for Animaniacs Live, and it was wonderful going back in history with her and talking to her about her performance as Queen Merla. And she also had a very fond memory of Voltron because it gave her a stepping stone into greater roles that she was able to get after Queen Merla.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's voiced so many amazing characters, and she's probably best known today for being Daisy Duck. She's the current voice of Daisy Duck. And so, yeah, I mean, what a trip through time this has been, and kind of a trip in its own right.
Mm-hmm. On its no own kidding. It really was. There was a point where, like, as we were listening to it, I was just like, I am in the 80s. 2000 what? It is 1980 something right now. I am a child again. Like, it was amazing. Yeah, I am really, glad you guys had me for this.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us for this. I really felt like I was eating about three or four pixie sticks while listening to this. It was so intense. Oh, dude,
it is. It's just like there's so much energy going on all at once, and I feel like if audiobooks today for any book like that like kept that same level of energy, I mean, who would be watching television, to be honest?
Right. Because I get a lot more images out of my own mind than what's on television.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
So, Mark, I will send you some scans of a few pages from this if you'd like to share it on the podcast page. And I'm sure we'll be able to look up the Roe Beast between now and then as well.
All right. Very cool. Thank you.
I can't wait to see that. That's going to be super cool.
We want to thank Kay Lionheart for joining us as our Voltron fan artist spotlight for this podcast. Remember, right now you can go to letsvoltron.com and click on the far right icon at the top for our TeePublic Let's Voltron store, and the first item will be Dungeons and Voltron by Kay Lionheart. For 3 days, all items such as pillows, phone cases, stickers, t-shirts, notebooks, posters, prints, and more for Dungeons and Voltron are on sale. Kay Lionheart will also be with us on our next podcast to help us review Episode 3 of Season 5 of Voltron Legendary Defender, Postmortem. We will be announcing our winner of the Voltron Signature Prize Pack in the podcast following that, as Seamus Kelly helps us review Krallzera. We'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron!
That was the end of the story. If you would like to hear it again, turn the tape over.